Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network and presented in partnership with TrekCore.com. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on January 23rd, 2021, and is current through Star Trek Discovery Season 3. So beware of spoilers. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a 30-minute news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are 6 television shows in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone, and my guest this week is ShuttlePod2 on Star Trek Twitter. It's Melanie. Melanie, welcome to Weekly Trek.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here. I appreciate you having me on the show. I'm a big fan of Weekly Trek.
Oh, it is my absolute pleasure. Well, Melanie, I ask my guests this question every week. I want to know something that's got you feeling good about Star Trek at the moment. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
Okay, there's actually a couple things. Currently, I'm rewatching Lower Decks.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, I was pretty blown away by the show. I ended up loving it a lot more than I thought, and I absolutely adore it. So I'm really excited to do a rewatch. And one of the things I appreciate is that upon rewatching it, I always catch something that I didn't catch before because there's so much amazing content and Easter eggs and all of that put into each episode at such a rapid pace. So I'm really happy to be able to have the opportunity to enjoy and absorb the show again. And I'm also reading an incredible book on Audible called The 50-Year Mission, The Complete, Uncensored, Unauthorized Oral History of Star Trek by Edward Gross and Mark Altman. I read the first 25 years and I just started the second 25 years, and it's jam-packed with fascinating and interesting behind-the-scenes goodies on the making of Star Trek in all its variations. And I wonder, have you read that one, Alex?
I have. It is fabulous in terms of going behind the scenes of the shows. For anybody who hasn't read it, it's basically they're sort of edited together interview excerpts with a whole, probably 100 people who are associated with Star Trek. Producers, writers, actors, Rick Berman, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A bunch of Gene Roddenberry stuff too, that sort of takes you through the history of each of the shows. Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise get a little bit of short shrift as obviously like the whole, there's a whole book about TOS and the TOS movies, and then TNG is a big piece of the second book, and then the follow-on shows. But it's still, I think it's still a really, like, if anybody's interested in the history of the whole Star Trek franchise, like, this would always be the two books that I would say to start off with, because it is so fabulous in terms of the way that it kind of peels back the onion of the whole history of the franchise.
Yeah, I'm loving it.
And Lower Decks, I mean, what a perfect time to have restarted a Lower Decks rewatch, since it is now available. We're recording this on Saturday, January the 23rd, and I think it was it yesterday or the day before it became available finally outside of North America. It's now in Europe and Australia and Japan and India, I think, and a few other countries. So very, very cool that international fans are finally getting the opportunity to watch Star Trek Lower Decks, and I can finally ditch the spoiler tags on all of our Lower Decks stories. Melanie, which was your favorite episode from season one?
My favorite episode is Envoys, which I believe was the second one.
Yep, that great episode.
Yeah, I adore that. I mean, they're all great, but that is my personal favorite.
That is awesome. Well, the thing I'm feeling good about this week is actually one of the latest releases from Fansets. They have been doing this series that they've just started of badges from the Star Trek franchise. And they just released the All Good Things comm badge, the sort of future Starfleet Delta that appears in All Good Things and Endgame and The Visitor. I think maybe one other episode that I'm blanking on. And it is a really, really fabulous pin. Previous releases in the series thus far, they've done the Voyager comm badge, they've done the Picard comm badge. Both of those, while fabulous pins, have pretty significant divergences from what you would call quote-unquote screen accurate in terms of getting the dimensions and the sizing and, you know, sort of the individual details of the piece right. The All Good Things badge, though, is nearly, it's 99% screen accurate, which for a mass-produced piece like that is the best that you can hope for. I know that they used a screen-used piece in order to match the references to create it. I know that because it's actually mine. And I can say with 100% guarantee that the badge they put together looks just as good as the one that's sitting in my case of screen-used badges. So,
wow.
And I think it's the first licensed release of that All Good Things Con badge. So if it is one that folks are interested in, I highly recommend picking it up. It is a really fabulous badge. And I think sort of signals a turning of the corner for that line. I think the guys over there are now really interested in making sure that the badges are as accurate as possible to what was seen on screen. And so I think this is an indication of more kind of like that to come in the badge range, more than the Voyager badge and the Picard badge, which the Picard badge is missing the groove around the Delta, and the mm-hmm. Voyager badge, the little slats in the back are way too big for what was on screen. But the All Good Things badge, spot on. If you're looking to start a collection, that's the one to start with, in my opinion.
That sounds incredible. I'm super impressed with the Fan Sets collection. I don't own any yet. I have a huge wish list, and whenever I see them on Twitter being displayed, they are phenomenal. So I'm looking forward to obtaining some of them soon, but wow, they're spectacular.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
After a year of teasing a big change to CBS All Access, the streaming service that is exclusive home of Alex Kurtzman-era Star Trek in the United States, we now know exactly when the U.S. streaming service will be rebranded to become the new Paramount Plus, following the merger between CBS and Viacom at the end of 2019. On March 4th, CBS All Access will be replaced by Paramount Plus, with international launches in certain territories beginning later in March. CBS All Access subscribers will see their subscriptions migrated automatically to Paramount Plus. You don't need to sign up again. No service or pricing changes have been announced at this time, but from everything we've seen, it does look like, obviously all the Star Trek's going to stay the same, but there will be additional content on Paramount Plus that's not available on CBS All Access that draws from Paramount's movie archive, Nickelodeon, MTV, some of these other Viacom properties that CBS did not own, but now Viacom CBS collectively owns. As for outside of the US, Paramount Plus will launch in Latin America on March 4th, the Nordic countries, so that's Sweden, Norway, Denmark, on March the 25th, and Australia in mid-2021. The current CBS All Access service in Canada will be rebranded to Paramount Plus, also on March 4th, 2021, and they say an expanded offering will be available later in the year. Don't know if that has any implications for Star Trek yet. No word yet on other major international markets like the United Kingdom or Germany, but I wouldn't be shocked if we did see Paramount Plus ultimately launch worldwide. On CBS All Access, you can already find preparations for the switch are underway. Episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks, for example, which we were just talking about, now have Paramount Plus branding when you reach the studio cards at the end of the episode instead of CBS All Access. Melanie, what do you think about CBS's plans to rebrand All Access into Paramount Plus? Are you looking forward to it, or is it just one more streaming service that we need to get our hands on?
I think it's great. My feeling is the more content you get for your subscription, the better. I'm happy to hear that the CBS portion will remain intact, because in addition to Star Trek, I really enjoy the CBS classics, whether it's, you know, Cheers, Frasier, Happy Days, Family Ties, Brady Bunch, and so on. I think it's interesting that they're adding possibly Nickelodeon, Comedy Central, and of course the movie features from Paramount, which will be interesting to me. I wonder with the Nickelodeon edition if that means Prodigy will be included, so I'm still a little unclear on all that. I'm old enough to remember when MTV debuted. I was a teenager and I remember how amazing it was. Obviously now it's a completely different entity, so that doesn't factor into the equation for me now, but overall I think it will be really interesting to see what's available and how it will all play out. So I'm interested in it. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think from a Star Trek perspective, you have identified one of two really important questions about this merger, right? Because obviously all of the TV shows are on CBS All Access. We expect that once it transitions to Paramount Plus, those shows will remain the same. I mean, certainly from like the Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek Picard type thing, mm-hmm. we're already seeing some promotional images released for Paramount Plus, and like Sonequa Martin-Green is front and center on the Paramount Plus branding, and Sir Patrick Stewart on a different version that I've seen. I think the two questions relate to the sort of non-CBS Star Trek properties. The first, which you've already identified, and we don't know the answer to is around, okay, Viacom CBS includes Nickelodeon. Star Trek Prodigy is going to premiere on Nickelodeon. Does this mean that Star Trek Prodigy will also be available on Paramount Plus? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to have a cable subscription and physically go to Nickelodeon in order to watch it? Don't know the answer to that yet. It's on my sort of list of things to do is to go and try and figure out how other Nickelodeon shows are handled in that regard. Like, do they get simultaneous releases? So we don't yet know if that's going to be sort of cable exclusive. On the one hand, you would think maybe it is, because if you're going to all the trouble of putting it on a network and you're trying to get the Star Trek fans over there to watch the advertising, if you put it on Paramount Plus, then they're not going to do that, and it sort of defeats the point of it. But for CBS new release shows on CBS All Access, you know, like your NCIS New Orleans is, for example, just to pick one out of the air because it has Scott Bakula in it, that show gets a CBS All Access release within like 24 hours of the show premiering on CBS. So I think it's certainly possible that Prodigy appears. The other question I have is around the movie. On March the 4th, if you load up Paramount Plus, are you going to get all 13 Star Trek movies? You should, because it's a Paramount streaming service. You should have everything available. And those 13 movies are more Star Trek content. CBS All Access has added a few Paramount movies, and they've added a few Star Trek movies. Like, I remember Star Trek First Contact and I think Nemesis were available on CBS All Access for a while. But we don't yet know the answer to that question also of, will all of the Star Trek movies be available? I really hope they will be, because I think that's the big unaccessed piece for us in terms of, if you want to go watch Star Trek on a streaming service, you can get every single hour of television Star Trek, but the movies come and go from your Netflixes and your Amazon Primes. It would be great to have one place where you could get all 13 anytime you wanted to, and Paramount Plus is the no-brainer place to put that.
I completely agree with you. If it is Paramount Plus, that is where it should be. I think we should have that. I hope that happens too. That needs to happen.
Well, in an interview with Gold Derby, Sir Patrick Stewart gave the lightest of hints about production for Star Trek Picard season 2 and what to expect. The actor, who celebrated his 80th birthday recently and announced on Twitter in the last few days that he had just received the first dose of one of the COVID-19 vaccines, talked about his eagerness to return to work. "This downtime is the longest period without work in my career. But in the last couple of weeks, I have been called to the studio for wardrobe costume fittings. I woke up both of those mornings that I had to drive myself to Santa Clarita so excited that I was attending a wardrobe session. It wasn't the same as walking in front of the camera and having to act a role, but the wheels were beginning to turn again and I felt so good." He went on to say that, "I have got 5 scripts of the show and different drafts of those scripts. I spend hours every day with them. I want to work. That is what I'm here for. That is what I do. I want a script in my hand. I want actors in front of me. I want to hear somebody say, 'Stand by, studio.' It's going to happen, and it's within view now. I actually think the first couple of days might be a bit challenging because of how do we tune back into what we were doing back before, but we have such an extraordinary cast, and these people will bring it, and they'll just hand it over to me." Sir Patrick also hinted that, in addition to Picard's death and resurrection at the end of season 1, another major theme of humanity would come into play in season 2. "That's a question that I brought up with Akiva and Terry when the 3 of us were having a script discussion," Sir Patrick said, referring to series co-executive producers Akiva Goldsman and Terry Matalas, who was new on the show in season 2. "I wanted to know exactly what they had done with me when they saved my life, and was there any chance this might have an impact on Picard's personality or behavior? They felt it probably wouldn't, but it lies there as an option should we need to take it. But also, there is another human aspect being introduced in season 2, which I am not allowed to talk about. But it's going to have, I think, quite an impact." Well, Melanie, it's super exciting, of course, to hear Sir Patrick talk about the likelihood that Star Trek Picard will soon start filming. Jerry Ryan had said February 1st was the target date, though I think there's some question as to whether that will stick or not, given how bad COVID-19 is in the LA area right now. And also particularly given that Sir Patrick is now only a couple of weeks away from being fully vaccinated. Obviously, he's probably the highest risk member of the cast, given his age. Is there anything in this interview that gives you hints about where you think they might take the story for Star Trek Picard season 2?
You know, I was thinking about that because he dropped that tantalizing clue. It's hard to say now that he's in the new synth body and the golem body, and I'm curious what's going to happen in that regard as far as the rest of the cast that we've grown to love, what's going to happen with their relationships moving forward. I've been racking my brain about this, and I'm not sure, but I have to say that I really enjoyed this article. Alex. I always love to hear what Sir Patrick Stewart has to say. You really get the sense of how passionate he is about his craft and how it's, as he puts it, what he does. You get the sense of about his excitement about getting back to work. And I really appreciated what he said about that the Picard show is trying to tie into current themes by being storytellers, not lecturing, but being storytellers in relation to what's going on in the world. And I found that very interesting. You know, age is just a number, but at the same time, I have to say that his vibrancy at age 80 is amazing to me. And I was really moved by what he said about shooting his final scene with Data in the season one finale of Picard. I actually was inspired by this article. So I rewatched that finale recently. And oh my gosh, what a beautifully written episode that is. And when I read the part about him saying he got choked up about not being able to get the words out with Brent Spiner in that scene, I could really see that once he explained that. And I found that very moving and touching. So I'm wondering, you know, what do you think? Because I'm not sure about the future.
Yeah, it's funny. Picard season one and Discovery season three sort of ended in more or less the same way in that there was no cliffhanger, right? That they sort of told the story of that season and ended it on this sort of moment of each of the respective ships, La Serena and the Discovery, kind of warping away into whatever the future was going to bring. But it feels like in Discovery, you sort of have a bit of a sense of what that is, right? I mean, you know, they have a mission in terms of reconnecting the father parts of the Federation back with Starfleet now that they have the ability to travel at warp again, given they've discovered all this dilithium. But in terms of Star Trek Picard, like, it really is a blank page for season two. They came into the show at the beginning of the first episode asking a bunch of questions, and they sort of answered them all by the end of it, right? In terms of what they seem to be really interested in around the synth ban and the reasons behind that and Romulan infiltration into Starfleet. And so they really could go in any direction in season two. I mean, I'm sure it will continue to have tie back to the supernova and synth issues, obviously now because Picard is a synth, and Romulans, I'm sure, will continue to play a big role in it. But I mean, it could really go anywhere. You know, there weren't a ton of kind of breadcrumbs at the end of that first season that really show you where to go in season two. So I'm actually really excited for that. I mean, I'm looking forward to them kind of telling a bit of a new story. I'm really interested to see the voice and style that Terry Matalas, who did 12 Monkeys and has replaced Michael Chabon as the showrunner for the show, kind of brings into this. 12 Monkeys is actually a really good television show. And it's kind of the same thing. It's sort of a shorter, tighter, serialized show that's quite complicated and pulls it off with aplomb. So I have very high hopes for Star Trek Picard season two. I'm really, really hoping they're able to start filming in February. Of course, totally understandable if they don't. But it's the one of these shows where it's like really tough to kind of say what's going to come next.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it as well. And I'm really interested in this ancient artificial intelligence that they keep talking about with the tentacles and all of that. I find that fascinating. And I hope that they bring Laris back because I really enjoy her. Yeah, I'm super excited about it also.
The autobiography of Catherine Janeway, which was released in September last year to coincide with the 25th anniversary of Star Trek Voyager and penned by Una McCormack, is getting an audiobook companion. And in a very special surprise, the first-person account of the life and career of Catherine Janeway will be narrated by none other than Captain Janeway actress Kate Mulgrew herself. StarTrek.com provided a short snippet of audio from the narration.
In the third year at the Academy, the nature of your studies alters somewhat. The number of large lecture classes gets fewer and fewer, and the barrage of in-class tests and end-of-semester exams reduces. Instead, you find yourself in smaller seminar groups, and if you're on the command track, as I was, you do more and more practice scenarios. I did not fail to notice how many of these involved encounters with Cardassian ships. By this point, the border conflicts that we now call the Federation-Cardassian War were well established and showed no sign of slowing down. Our tutors were preparing us for this conflict. There were some practical additions, for example, field medicine and surgery courses. I have certainly used these in my later career, not to mention the memory training techniques we were taught in Hawk's physiology classes. This background rumble of potential conflict was something we were all keenly aware of, and I recall numerous late-night conversations among friends as we pondered what it might be like on the battlefield. Life was full and busy, and we were far enough away from graduating to be able to put aside our worries for a little while. By this point, I felt that I had the right balance, combining studies and my social life, and keeping at or near the top of my classes, getting downtime in the gardens, as long as nothing happened to disrupt my equilibrium. Naturally, this was the moment I chose to fall in love.
Which, as you heard, is very exciting indeed. The audio version of the autobiography of Catherine Janeway is expected to become available on January 26th on all audiobook platforms, and I, for one, am stoked for this. More Catherine Janeway as read by Kate Mulgrew? Sign me up. Melanie, do you think you'll be picking this one up?
Oh, absolutely. I am a huge Voyager fan. I'm a huge Janeway fan, huge Kate Mulgrew fan. I have this definitely on the list to order on January 26th. On Audible. I am super excited. And to have her doing the narration is just the icing on the cake. I think it will add such a tremendously deep layer of authenticity to the project, because when you hear that unmistakable Janeway voice, it's just her. And I'm really glad that she chose to participate in this, just like she did with Prodigy. And in all the interviews I've heard with Kate, I think you can really tell that the pride that she takes in the role. She definitely speaks very fondly about her memories and her thoughts about, you know, the importance of the role and what a positive experience this was in her life. At least that's the sense I get when I hear her speak about it. So hearing that Janeway authentic voice from her, I think is going to add so much to this project. And I can't wait to order it.
Yeah, good on CBS for even sort of floating this, and good on Kate for doing it. I guess I was thinking about this. I suppose, you know, she's doing Star Trek Prodigy, so has gone to all the trouble of building a home studio to record the audio for that show. Mm-hmm. I mean, why not throw this on top, right, and get paid for it? You're already in the state of mind to be doing Catherine Janeway. Did you get a chance to read the book yet, or will this be your first exposure to it?
Oh, first exposure.
I read the book and I really enjoyed it. And actually, I think the fact that Kate Mulgrew is voicing it is terrific. So this is the third of the autobiography releases. There were two previous ones, the autobiography of James T. Kirk and the autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard, both of which were written by David A. Goodman, who's now one of the producers on the Orville. And this Janeway one is written by Una McCormack. And those first two books are quite different. They don't have audiobook versions. There's no William Shatner reading the autobiography of Captain Kirk, and there's no Sir Patrick Stewart reading the autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard. Those books were quite different, though, in that they were, I think, a bit more focused on kind of filling in some of the events of those characters' lives outside of the bits that we saw. The autobiography of Catherine Janeway, on the other hand, goes way deeper on the things that we already knew about Janeway, the events that had happened in her life, some of those early experiences, her relationship with her father. It's very much sort of interior facing is the wrong word, but like it's a very thoughtful book about the character of Catherine Janeway herself, and like helping you understand less about the things that happened in between the bits that you saw on TV or the bits you heard about on TV, but going deeper into like, how did this person become the way this person is? And so to get the opportunity to hear Kate Mulgrew kind of express those thoughts, and I thought Una McCormack did a terrific job of capturing the voice of Janeway. And so now to hear that voice of Janeway in the voice of Janeway is going to be even cooler. Like this for me was one of the most exciting things that has been announced in a while, short of another TV show. It'll be a great little, you know, amuse-bouche in some ways for Star Trek Prodigy coming later this year to get that little bit of taste of Kate Mulgrew back in the saddle as Janeway before we actually see her in animated form on screen once Prodigy premieres.
That's really good to hear. I'm happy to hear that it goes to that deep level, because that's something I've always wanted when you're watching Voyager. You know, I've always wondered about those things when she hits on that stuff briefly, and it's made me wonder. So it's good to hear, you know, your review of the book, and I am beyond excited about this. I agree. It's one of the best pieces of news I've heard.
Yeah, like it goes into much more detail about her relationship with Mark, for example, you know, which is only really touched on in the I mean, obviously, you know, they're engaged at the start of the show. You know that by the time they reconnect with Starfleet in season four, he has moved on because he thinks, you know, he been led to believe that she was dead. But like, it sort of takes you through that relationship, where it came from, and then more about kind of how she sort of viewed the way that things had developed in terms of, you know, they got engaged and then she got lost in the Delta Quadrant, and then, you know, him finding out that she was alive again and all of that. And there is one sort of bigger surprise at the end of the book, which is, was a little strange, but I'm interested to hear what people think about it once they get a chance to listen.
That sounds intriguing. And yeah, I've always wanted to know more about Mark and all of that backstory. So sounds awesome.
And lastly this week, Star Trek science advisor and former guest on the show, perhaps more importantly, Dr. Mohammed Noor, has launched a new YouTube series with Star Trek Discovery actress Jane Brooke, who portrayed Admiral Cornwell in seasons 1 and 2. BioTrekkie with the Admiral, which expands on Dr. Noor's existing YouTube series on the science of Star Trek, uses concepts from Star Trek Discovery season 3 episodes as springboards to teach interesting real-world biology. Videos cover 1 to 2 Star Trek Discovery episodes at a time and close with Brooks's insights about acting and production. So both Brooke and Noor alternate taking on the role of student and teacher of their respective craft. 2 episodes of BioTrekkie with the Admiral have been released so far, with more on the way. So head over to Dr. Noor's YouTube channel, BioTrekkie Explains, for more information. Melanie, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch any of these episodes yet, but did you enjoy the science included in Star Trek Discovery season 3? I mean, I personally thought it was incredible that they were able to get, in addition to Dr. Noor on the sort of biological sciences side, they have Dr. Erin McDonald on the like astrophysical side. And it really did feel to me that the science in season 3 was quite a lot elevated from season 1 and 2. What was your feelings about that?
Oh, I completely agree. I think the science on Discovery season 3 was amazing. I have not seen any of the videos, but this is super cool. Dr. Noor is a science consultant for the show, and I'm a big Jane Brooke fan. And I've often thought when I'm watching the show, whether it's listening to Technobabble or just hearing science, I've always wanted some type of science tutorial for myself to help explain some of these concepts. Like, it would be great to have a science tutorial. While also hearing about the behind the scenes tidbits from Jane Brooke about her experiences on the set sounds like an incredible combination to me. This was an inspired idea. I'm very, very interested in it, and I'm looking forward to tuning in for sure.
And it's 2 things. One, it's amazing to me that like an actress like Jane Brooke, who, you know, was on 4 or 5 episodes of Star Trek Discovery, but like is sort of done with Star Trek now, right? I mean, her character died at the end of season 2. So she's definitely not going to be on Star Trek Discovery because it's 800 years in the future. She's almost certainly not going to be on Star Trek Strange New Worlds because her character died in the 23rd century and Strange New Worlds is set after that. Is still interested in having an association with the Star Trek franchise, goes to show how much a lot of these actors, I think, really enjoy the experience they have. The other thing too is, if I remember, I'll put this in the show notes, but Dr. Noor and Dr. McDonald wrote this really great piece for StarTrek.com explaining the science behind the burn. You know, lots of people had sort of expressed a bit of disappointment around the explanation for it was Sukar the Kelpian, and he got very distraught at the death of his mother, and that caused the burn and the destruction of most of the dilithium in the galaxy. But they sort of lead you through this very convincing argument about, obviously it's still TV science, but it is TV science that is grounded in not only what we understand about dilithium from the sort of canon of Star Trek, but also what we understand about genetics and about astrophysics in terms of the way that, you know, something like that could work. So it gave a lot of context behind the science of the burn in a way that didn't just feel like a character sort of spitting meaningless techno babble at you and hoping that that was enough, right? It sort of felt like a bit of a real world science explanation to help, you know, sort of encourage people to sort of understand a bit more that this was not the sort of entirely kind of zany TV trope that it could have been.
That sounds super interesting to me. That was an article, you said?
Yeah, on StarTrek.com.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to learn more about the science of the burn. I mean, I appreciated the Sukal part of it because, frankly, that Sukal Kelpian storyline really touched me emotionally. I loved the emotional connection to the burn. I really enjoyed the Sukal story with Saru and the Kelpian story there towards the end of Discovery season 3. But I would like to learn more about the science of the burn. So that sounds like a great article.
All right. Well, we've talked about the facts. And now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain. But it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, I and my guest give you a wish or theory when nurturing about any of the shows or the future of the franchise. So Melanie, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
Okay, here's my wish, and I know there are other people out there who have the same one. I would like, Alex, some type of follow-up to Enterprise.
Okay.
Be it miniseries, short trek, reunion, movie like Firefly got with Serenity. I'll take anything. Same cast, of course. Some type of follow-up to Enterprise is my deep wish.
So if Alex Kurtzman came to you tomorrow and said, Melanie, we're going to do it. Pitch me on what you think it should be. What would you tell him?
Ooh. Well, because it's X number of years later, I mean, ultimately, I would still love to see the Romulan War and everything that they had planned. But because we're talking years, decades later, and the actors are where they're at, I would like to see, where is the crew now? What are they doing now? What are their relationships? Are they still together? What's happening? Who's an admiral? Who's doing what? I want some type of closure about this story because I am very connected personally to the show. And so, yeah, I would like to see a where are they now type of thing, I think.
Trip Tucker, dead or alive?
Alive, Trip lives, for sure.
Would you go the Star Trek novel route of him being having faked his own death to become an undercover Section 31 agent?
Ooh, sure, I'll buy that. Why not?
Yeah, they brought him back to life in the novels and basically made the... There's a whole book, I think it's called The Good That Men Do, which is about how these are the voyages, the sort of official history of that mission was a complete fabrication, and that actually happened much earlier in the Enterprise's mission, and Trip faked his own death in order to play a pivotal role in being an undercover operative during the Romulan War.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, cool. more novels that I have to read.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, the Enterprise relaunch is actually pretty good. It's worth a read.
Excellent.
I love that. I personally would love a political Star Trek show about the, you know, President Jonathan Archer, because in A Mirror Darkly, there was a biographical screen which you couldn't read, you know, in the episode in which Mirror Archer is looking at Jonathan Archer's biography as told from the USS Defiant in the 23rd century. And it does say that he was, I think, maybe not the first Federation president, but he was one of the first Federation presidents. Yep. And, you know, given it's been 2 decades since the show and like we're sort of that much further along, like I think something like that could be pretty cool.
I would love to hear more about President Archer, and I still want to hear that speech he gave, Alex.
Yep.
And actually on Twitter about 6 months ago, some friends on Twitter started crafting that speech. We did not finish it, but at some point I want to hear that speech.
Did it or did it not include anything about a gazelle?
It did not. Yeah, it probably, did not.
Probably for the best. For anybody who's not sure what we're talking about, we're referring to Archer's very famous and quite maligned speech from Shockwave Part 2, the opening episode of the second season, in which he defends Earth's mission out in space as being much like a baby gazelle that he once saw born in the savannah. And I know our good friend Jim Morehouse, the host of the Trek Ranks podcast, is a huge, huge fan of the gazelle speech.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so my theory this week is a listener submission. This comes from @.ufp on Twitter. And his or her or their theory is that when Paramount Plus is launched, that we will get an announcement about more short treks, which I think is a cool idea. I think, you know, if you're launching a new streaming service, you're trying to build some excitement, I think doing a few more short treks is a good idea and getting them out, you know, quicker than we know that Star Trek Discovery Season 4 will be. We're expecting that late this year at the earliest, or Star Trek Picard Season 2 will be. That probably will not premiere until early next year at this point. So, you know, if they can film some short treks, whether it's Picard short treks or Discovery short treks, and get those out in the summer or the fall, since they're much shorter, that could be a lot of fun. And they could even do Strange New Worlds ones. If Strange New Worlds goes before the cameras in February, like we're expecting, it certainly does look like production is ramping up in Toronto right now. So I think, again, COVID depending, that'll go ahead. So you could theoretically see more short treks coming down the line. And if we have a bit of a wait for, you know, series live action Star Trek to come back, then I think .UFP's theory about more short treks is a fun one. I don't know with COVID and everything if that's something they're going to be able to pull off, but I really hope they do. So I'm a big fan of that theory. Melanie, what do you think?
I agree. Big fan of the theory, and I hope it happens too. I love the short treks and I miss the short treks. So I vote for any short treks as soon as possible.
Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, Strange New Worlds, or the future of the franchise that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek, or email them to me at weeklytrek@thetricordertransmissions.com, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Melanie, for joining me today. Melanie, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
I can be reached on Twitter at ShuttlePod2, and that's T-W-O.
And you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek, and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, Melanie. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.